Hey, welcome back. As much as I enjoyed that hour of open lines, and believe me, I did, it's always great to talk to you all. I'm also equally happy that we finally have connected overseas with Marcus Allen, the UK distributor and publisher of Nexus magazine. Curse that daylight saving time. That is the culprit here. We got our wires crossed, but we've got him. And on the, well, in just a few moments, he'll be with us. And we will talk about all of the little problems surrounding the Apollo missions to the moon. We'll also talk about the Hasselblad, a camera that he is well acquainted with. And that is the camera that went to the moon. And he'll tell us why it's highly unlikely all those thousands of pictures that were supposedly taken on the lunar surface probably were not. Marcus Allen is next on Coast to Coast AM. Marcus Allen is the British distributor and publisher of the UK edition of Nexus magazine. Nexus deals with news and information that's overlooked, unreported, or ignored by the mainstream media. Subjects covered include hidden history, future science, alternative health issues, conspiracies, and UFOs. Like many others, Marcus watched the Apollo moon landings live on television and at the time applauded the event success of those, the evident success of those missions. After attending a lecture more than a decade ago, which requested the validity of the moon landings, he decided to carry out his own research. Having worked as a photographer in London in the 1960s, he was able to examine the well-known photographs issued by NASA from a professional viewpoint. He's also researched many other aspects of Apollo. He's given many public presentations on the subject, during which he always asks for someone to prove him wrong. To date, no one has. He's reluctantly come to the conclusion that it's beyond reasonable doubt some manipulation of the Apollo record has taken place. Marcus Allen, so good to have you back on Coast to Coast. How are you?
Hello, Richard. I'm well, thank you. Apologies for the business with the timing.
No worries. Between the time zone difference and the daylight savings time, you have to have an advanced degree in calculus to figure out, you know, what time it is in a certain place. No worries. We're happy to have you.
Good.
So the camera that went to the moon, the Hasselblad, this is a camera that you're well acquainted with. What do we need to know about the Hasselblad in order to understand why it would have been almost impossible for Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin to take those wonderful photos on the moon?
Right. The main problem with the camera is the restrictions that are around it when you are wearing a spacesuit. Because if you're wearing a spacesuit, you've got very restricted movement, specifically with your hands, because it's not possible to wear half a spacesuit. You've got to wear the whole thing, the helmet, the gloves, the boot, the lot. And the Hasselblad camera is a very, very good camera, no doubt about that. But for a start, because you couldn't get your head down to see the viewfinder, which is on top of the Hasselblad camera, they took the viewfinder away, so there was no viewfinder in the camera. Now, that's not a problem necessarily. It's possible to take photographs without a viewfinder quite easily with any camera. But the photographs that we see are very well framed. There are no heads cut off. There are no bits missing. There are no odd angles. And if you're going to take a photograph, you've got to press the shutter, because the Hasselblad is not a point-and-shoot camera like most people are familiar with. You switch the camera on and away you go. With the Hasselblad, you have to press the shutter button, which is on front of the Hasselblad camera, which you can't see from inside your spacesuit either. The film dial, which records whether you've taken a photograph, is not visible from inside the helmet either. And yet, with these restrictions on use, because you're wearing what are, in effect, heavy-duty gardening gloves on your hands,
right,
as part of the spacesuit. So you don't have the ability to feel very much, because they're deliberately designed to protect the astronaut. So with all these restrictions on use, like no viewfinder, no shutter button visible, no film counter visible, and of course in space no one can hear you scream, so there's no sound.
you can't hear the shutter click.
Exactly. And normally when you hear the shutter click, that is normally the mirror moving out of the way. The Hasselblad is a single lens reflex camera. When you look, if you look through a normal Hasselblad, you're looking through the lens that is taking the photograph. That's what a single lens reflex is. It's a very clever piece of equipment. Now, the Hasselblad camera is a very, it's almost like a Swiss watch. It's so good. It's a very, very effective camera.
Isn't it possible that did they not modify the Hasselblad in some way, or was it the one that you would a consumer could buy? Is that the one they took to the moon?
Well, the one that was taken to the moon is very similar to the one that you can buy. It looks very much the same. It supposedly had its leatherette covering taken off, and it was painted in a sort of aluminium shade of color to reflect the heat, we're told. Because on the moon, there is considerable variation of temperature between, if you're standing in sunlight, the temperature will be at 120 degrees centigrade, hotter than the boiling point of water. If you're in the shade, it's minus 120 degrees centigrade, colder than anywhere here on Earth, because the moon doesn't have an atmosphere, which we do here on Earth. So you've got these restrictions on use. Yes, it looks very similar to the Hasselblad you can go into a shop today and buy. Very similar to the size. I've actually handled a replica of the Lunar camera, which is owned by Hasselblad UK, and if you ask them very nicely, they'll lend it to you. And you can have a look at it. So it's no secret what it looks like. As I say, it's very similar to the one you can go into a shop today and buy.
Right. What about focus? I mean, today we have things like autofocus. We have, talk to me about the autofocus. Did they have such a thing back then?
Yeah, it's a good point, that, because as I mentioned earlier, most people are familiar with point-and-shoot cameras, which do the focus automatically. On this camera, the Hasselblad camera used allegedly on the moon, you had to focus it yourself. Now, that is done quite simply by a ring on the lens. The lens is the best part of the camera. That's the bit that comes out of the front, and you have to focus it. Now, you can only really focus a camera by looking through the viewfinder. There are indications of distance on the lens. You've also got to set the shutter speed, and you've got to set the aperture, which is the amount of light that you will let into the camera depending on the conditions around. Now, you would normally use a light meter for this. An automatic camera, it does it automatically without you even doing anything about it. But on the Lunar Hasselblad, you have to do it all by hand. You have to set the focus, the shutter speed, and the aperture rings by hand. Again, you can't see those from inside your spacesuit. Now, Hasselblad were asked, and the only modification that is really obvious are the little paddles that were attached to these three rings, the focus, shutter speed, and aperture rings, so that you could move them with what were, in effect, heavy-duty gardening gloves, which is what a spacesuit would use. So there were a couple of modifications, but nothing that really aided the astronauts' use of the camera. So you've got a great many restrictions on how the camera looks and how the camera works.
Right.
And an important point to remember, of course, is that this is a film camera, not a digital camera. It uses photographic film, and maybe a few people will be familiar with having used a film camera. And you put your roll of film into the camera, which is a specially coated piece of plastic. It's coated with emulsion, which is light sensitive, so that the amount of light coming in will be recorded on the film. You then take it out of the camera and send it away to be developed, or develop it yourself if you've got the right equipment. So it doesn't produce instant photographs. It produces photographs which are very good. I say the Hasselblad camera is an extremely good camera in terms of the quality of the lens and the quality of the mechanism. But you still have to have the film developed.
Right. I do want to circle back to the film in a second, but I just had a couple other points on the actual camera itself. So without access to a viewfinder, essentially, was Neil Armstrong taking most of the pictures, or was Buzz Aldrin also taking pictures?
Right. On Apollo 11, most of the photographs you see are of Buzz Aldrin, taken by Neil Armstrong.
Okay.
Ironically, there were two cameras provided. There was one for each astronaut was provided. NASA ordered a batch of them. And there was one in the command module, if astronauts are on the lunar surface, the command module is still orbiting. and there was a camera available in that. But there was only one camera used on Apollo 11 to take the photographs of the EVA, the extravehicular activity, the moonwalk, in effect.
Right. And how long were they on the surface? About 5 hours?
No. On Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong was on the surface for about just over 2 hours, 20 minutes, because he was first out, if you recall, one small step.
Right.
And all
yes.
That.
Yes.
And then Buzz Aldrin followed him about 20 minutes later. So in total, they were on the lunar surface for just over 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Which was Neil Armstrong. He was on the surface for longer. So he was doing most of the photography.
And how many pictures did he snap in that time? Do we know?
On the surface, there were 121 photographs taken. Well, that's what appears in the record of the Apollo 11 photographs. 121 taken on the lunar surface, so which isn't a problem. That's,
no.
That's about one a minute, just
right.
Under one a minute. Which is quite possible. You press the shutter button, you've taken a photograph, and you move on to the next subject.
And how many of those 121 photos turned out?
Virtually all of them came out okay. There were one or two that are, they're described officially as unofficial shutter release. Basically, if it's slightly out of focus or it's slightly off-center, there are about three or four, I would say, in total, of those 121. You can go onto a website, you can go onto the NASA website. I use the Lunar and Planetary Institute website. I prefer the way they lay it out. There are about four websites. You can go onto it and see every single photograph taken, including the dud ones, because there were some dud ones.
That's a pretty good ratio. I mean, I had a 35 millimeter, I think it was an Olympus, I think I had, back in the early 80s, and even with a viewfinder, even with an automatic focus, I don't think I would be able to obtain that high a shooting ratio, where out of 120, all but four turned out. And no viewfinder. Hard
well,
to believe.
Exactly. It's this lack of the viewfinder which is the really troubling aspect. In fact, there is another even more troubling aspect we'll come on to maybe a bit later. But it's perfectly possible to take photographs without a viewfinder, and a good photographer can do that. But if a photographer turned up to take your wedding photographs and didn't use a viewfinder, you might question his professionalism. Because obviously you want to make sure that you get everything as correct as possible.
Exactly.
But Neil Armstrong seemed to be not only having the right stuff, he was he had the photographic stuff as well. Yes, he would have practiced, and the story is that the astronauts were told to take the cameras with them and photograph the family and the barbecues and the holidays and the any subject that they could. But there's no record of those photographs that they took. We're just told that that's what happened. Now, they had a lot of other things to train to do as well, like land the craft and get to the moon and make sure they stayed alive for the eight days that they were trying to do it. Of course, bear in mind that the Apollo 11 wasn't the only craft that allegedly landed. There were another five that followed that,
right.
After Apollo 17.
Right, yes. And did they all use the Hasselblad up until 1973?
Yep. The Hasselblad was the only camera that the astronauts used extensively. There were other cameras that were carried on the Apollo craft, but the Hasselblad camera is the one that was used to take all the photographs that we've seen. Whenever you look in a book or a magazine or even on films that are taken, if you see the photographs, they're all taken with the Hasselblad camera.
All right. So, you know, this was a mechanical device. You mentioned it's kind of almost like a Swiss watch. Lots of moving parts. You have gears. You have springs. You've got a shutter. You know, metal parts inside this camera. You've described the temperature variance: 120 degrees Celsius in the sun, 120 degrees minus 120 in the shade. How does a Hasselblad respond to the heat and the cold? Let's say just here on Earth. You've used the camera extensively. Tell me.
Oh yes. Well, so far as we can see, and all the records show, the camera responded flawlessly. 100% of the time. There's no record of any of the 12 cameras that were used on the lunar surface. There were no reports of any faults any jams, any split films, any problems with any of the cameras. If you go onto the website, you can see all the photographs in the sequence in which they were taken, supposedly, which seems a remarkable achievement. Now, the Hasselblad camera is certainly a very, very good camera, but there are many other things that need to be considered to ensure that the quality is maintained, because the photographic record is basically all that we have of these missions. They happened 50 years ago. Apollo 11 was 50 years ago last year, July of last year. And they continued up to Apollo 17 in 1972. That was when it ended. But it's a remarkable record. And as you say, it's quite possible to get things wrong with a camera, which is why you take lots and lots of photographs.
That's but mechanically, how does it respond to the cold and the heat here on Earth?
Well, Hasselblad cameras are designed to operate within the temperature ranges we have here on Earth. Now, you would expect there to be some sort of modification, because on the Moon we know there are considerable range of temperatures, but there is also something else on the Moon which we don't have here on Earth, and that is a vacuum, because there's no atmosphere on the Moon. There's nothing to retain any of the heat. There's nothing to retain any of the pressure, because there is no pressure. That is what a vacuum is. It is a lack of pressure. Now, on the Moon, there is no pressure at all. There's no atmosphere at all. And in a vacuum, photographic film behaves very differently to the way it behaves here on Earth. Now, here on Earth, we live under a continual pressure at sea level of 14.7 pounds per square inch, which sounds quite a lot, and it is. We don't notice it because it's all around us. But on the Moon, there is no pressure. It's a vacuum. It's virtually 100% vacuum. Without getting into the technicalities of how vacuums are measured, there's no atmosphere at all, therefore there is no pressure. Now, photographic film behaves very differently in a vacuum to the way it does here on Earth. In a vacuum, you get a phenomenon called outgassing, where the vacuum basically strips away any molecule of moisture. It just evaporates, which is why if you've ever done those high school experiments where you put some water into a vacuum chamber and create the vacuum in the chamber, you'll see the water starts to boil. That's in effect what happens when you get outgassing. You get the pressure relieved, in this case on the water, and the gases inside it come out, which appears to be boiling. Now, on the Moon, say there is no pressure, it's 100% vacuum. The molecules in the emulsion, because the emulsion starts life as a liquid, it's coated onto a plastic backing, which is what the film is, that vacuum starts to outgas the emulsion, and the emulsion starts to break down. Now, this is a major problem.
It is.
It can be overcome. And the way we know this is that there was an unmanned satellite sent to the Moon. I have no problem with unmanned satellites going to the Moon. It was sent in 1966, and it was called the Lunar Orbiter, not to be confused with the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which was about 50 years later. The Lunar Orbiter was sent to the Moon to photograph potential landing sites for the Apollo missions.
Marcus, I'm going to jump in and just pardon the interruption. We'll take a quick time out, come back, and you'll tell us about the problem with the film emulsion on the lunar surface. John Lennon slipping in a slide and taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. If you like what you're hearing tonight and you want to find out more about what I do and how you can listen to some of my other projects, go to my website, strangeplanet.ca. Strange Planet, all one word. StrangePlanet.ca, that's your portal to my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show. My podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited. You can also find my YouTube channel linked up there, which is called Strange Planet. My Strange Planet shop, it's all there, StrangePlanet.ca. And if you register, you'll receive my free monthly newsletter, The Inner Sanctum. Just go to StrangePlanet.ca, enter your name, your email address, and you'll start receiving my free monthly newsletter delivered to your inbox, your email inbox every month. Back to more of my conversation with Marcus Allen from Nexus Magazine, as we discuss the lunar landing hoax right here on Coast to Coast AM. Marcus Allen from Nexus Magazine is here. Marcus, before the break, you were talking about the off-gassing of the film on the lunar surface because of the vacuum. And to illustrate that point, you were talking about the one of the lunar, not the lunar rover, but what was it?
Lunar orbiter.
Lunar orbiter. Thank you. Go ahead.
Right.
Yes. You were explaining. Yes,
The lunar orbiter was an unmanned spacecraft sent to photograph the potential Apollo landing sites on the moon. And that carried photographic film on board. It was a very, very clever craft, very, very well designed. But the point about the film that was carried was that it was maintained under a 1 pound per square inch pressure. Inside the lunar orbiter craft, the photographic film, the reels of it, and the cameras through which it passed, and the equipment that scanned the resulting photograph for transmission back to Earth, that was all housed in a special pressurized container within the spacecraft, implying that photographic film has to be maintained under a small amount of pressure. Now, 1 pound per square inch pressure here on Earth, you would find that at about 60,000 feet. On the top of Mount Everest, you've got about 5 pounds per square inch. At sea level, you've got 14.7 pounds per square inch. In space, there is no pressure. It's a vacuum. So the point is that to maintain photographic film's integrity, it must be kept under a degree of pressure. And the pressure is supplied by a nitrogen gas canister. And this is all shown in the diagrams and illustrations of the lunar orbiter craft. It was followed about 5 or 6 years later with what's called the Hexagon Spy Satellite, which was an Earth-orbiting satellite photographing whatever it wanted to. And that similarly had photographic film maintained under 1 pound per square inch of pressure. This is all in the record. So if you've got photographic film that is not pressurized, it will not work. It will become too brittle to go through the camera, and it will break, and it will basically not record the information that you needed.
Right. So they had the film under pressure on the lunar orbiter, but there's no evidence that they had any sort of a housing to keep the film on the Hasselblad cameras on the moon under pressure.
That's correct. That's exactly right, because there are many photographs of these lunar Hasselblad cameras. And if they had a pressurized housing, it would be obvious. It would be it would surround the camera.
Right, right.
But now, there is no indication that that occurred at all, and nor in the film cameras either.
Now, because of the moving parts in a camera, I would assume that there would have to be some sort of a lubricant inside the camera to make sure that you don't have, just like in a car, otherwise you'd have metal rubbing on metal. Would that off-gas as well?
It would. That's a good point, because all metals have to be kept apart, and they're kept apart by lubrication, which is a very thin film of oil, in most cases, which keeps the metal apart. In a vacuum, if metals come into contact with each other, there's a phenomenon called cold welding, because obviously space is pretty cold, and metals coming into contact with each other will literally weld themselves together, because there is nothing to keep them apart. There is no layer of oxygen as we have here on Earth. You can put two sheets of metal together here on Earth, and they won't weld together, obviously, because there are a lot of molecules of air which separate them. In space, if there is no air, because there's a vacuum, two metals coming into contact with each other, because of the power of a vacuum, and a vacuum is a very, very powerful force, it will literally strip atoms away from any metal, which will become entangled with any other metal close to it or touching it. That's called cold welding. And there is no indication that happened. Now, as you say, a Hasselblad camera being almost like a Swiss watch, there's a lot of mechanism inside it, especially in the magazine, which advances the film. The only automatic function on the Lunar Hasselblad was the film advance mechanism, which was powered by batteries underneath the camera, small torch-type batteries. In the UK, we call them D2-style batteries. That's the size of them. Now, batteries as well do not survive in a vacuum because batteries have a material inside it which creates the current, which started life as a liquid, and that will, when the pressure is released on those batteries, the batteries will expand. And this has been demonstrated. I have a colleague in Canada who is actually doing the experiments right now with vacuum, with a vacuum chamber, which he bought specifically to do this, these testing, and he tested films in it, and they are damaged. And the resulting pictures, obviously, if you're doing any experiment, you have a control, so you have a piece of film, similar film, that was not put in a vacuum chamber, and you take a photograph with that, and you get quite a nice photograph. You take a photograph with a film that was put in the vacuum chamber and then released from the pressure, and there is a noticeable and visible difference between the two. But on the lunar photographs, we don't see any difference. We don't see anything that would indicate that the film is in any way damaged. So what you've got is a real mystery that if it requires pressurization in a vacuum to maintain the integrity of photographic film, and there was no pressurization, these photographs, we are told, were taken on the lunar surface, could not have been taken on the lunar surface.
Right. Now, let's assume everything was working somehow. I don't know. I mean, it's not just one little problem here or there. Everything. Everything presents a problem with these cameras on the lunar surface. Let's assume.
Oh,
let's push all that aside for a moment, and let's go back to the film. And those of us who remember film cameras and going on vacation and taking our film through airport security, and if you had a high speed film, you would hand that to the person in security so that they would avoid the X-ray machine because that would fog your film.
Exactly.
So what about the radiation on the moon? What would that do to the film?
It would do exactly that. It would fog it. Fog it is basically reducing the contrast because the film has been partially exposed by the radiation. Because that's what film is designed to do. It is sensitive to radiation, which is what we call a visible light. But there's also lots and lots of other wavelengths of light on the moon, which we can't see with the eye because we're not designed to see it. But they're called gamma rays, they're called X-rays, they're called galactic cosmic rays, they're called solar particle events. There's all of these things which are in space. And photographic film is very sensitive to radiation. And that is why, as you say, when you're taking high-speed film, it purely means that it's more sensitive than low-speed film. High-speed film is sensitive to different types of radiation. Therefore, you took it out of your camera or you put it in your bag and you gave it to the attendant at the security barrier to examine it by hand, as it were. If you put it through the X-ray machine, and some of the original X-ray machines in security at airports were actually quite powerful. They emitted a considerable amount of radiation in the form of X-rays. Which is why when you go and have your teeth X-rayed or your leg X-rayed, if you've broken it, it's quite a powerful frequency.
Right.
And it exposes on film to show you the picture. So you've got this problem of photographic film being known to be very sensitive to radiation, and yet in space we know there is a considerable amount of radiation. It's being investigated right now because Apollo happened over 50 years ago, and the new program called Artemis, who is Apollo's twin sister, so that presumably implies that there are going to be women on the moon, are still trying to examine the means of getting through these radiation dangers, not just the radiation belts, which we've heard about, the Van Allen radiation belts, which have started about 700 or 800 miles above the Earth's surface, but the radiation beyond them, because space is full of radiation.
How does the radiation on the moon, do we know, how would that compare to the radiation in the X-ray machines at the airport?
It probably wouldn't be quite as powerful because in an airport X-ray machine, they're concentrated, they're directed into a specific area. But there would be background radiation, there would be radiation frequencies, electrons, protons, all the various types of radiation in space, which we are protected from here on Earth by the Earth's magnetic field, creating these Van Allen radiation belts, and by the Earth's atmosphere that protects us. So we're quite cozy here on Earth. In space, we're not protected. And on the moon, there would be as much radiation on the moon as there would be in the Van Allen radiation belts, because it's basically coming from the same source. It's coming from the sun, it's coming from deep space, it's coming from all over. We've got to protect ourselves from it, which we do very well. The Earth does that very well. But if you go beyond the protection of the Earth, you've got to carry your own protection. And the best way of doing that is using something like lead, which is very solid, or uranium, which is equally solid, but that's radioactive in itself, so probably not a good idea to have that. So you've got to protect yourself against radiation, which is why when you go and have your teeth x-rayed, the technician is wearing a lead apron to protect himself from the radiation being generated by the x-ray machine.
Right, and even if...
On the moon, sorry.
I was just going to say, even if the radiation on the moon isn't as intense as in an x-ray machine, the duration, because you pass in and out of an X-ray machine very quickly, there, even if it's less intense, the astronauts were exposed to it for an extended period of time, several hours.
They would. Well, in some cases, several days, because once you're in space, once you're beyond the Earth's protective covering, the atmosphere, you are exposed to radiation. Now, it's similar, you know, if you go out in the sun for a couple of hours, you probably won't get too much sunburn. But if you spend all day in the sun, very powerful sun, you'll get sunburn. I mean, the sun produces an incredible amount of energy. So you have to be protected from it. So what protection were the astronauts offered? And I can find none. I've contacted the manufacturers of the spacesuits, a company called Hamilton Standard, or the International Latex Corporation in Delaware, and they referred me to NASA to get the answer. They said, we built the spacesuits according to specifications supplied to us by NASA. I approached NASA and said, what protection was afforded to the astronauts from the radiation known to exist in space? I'm still waiting for the reply.
And what about? I mean, that's a whole other show, but getting back to the camera, have you posed these problems to NASA about the camera? Do they have a standard answer?
They don't have an answer because they will not address these problems. Several questions were put to NASA many years ago by a friend of mine who was making a film about the Apollo moon landings. The film is called What Happened on the Moon. And they approached NASA, and they were given an opportunity to put the questions to their media director, a gentleman by the name of Brian Welch, who subsequently died. But he was asked these questions, specifically about the photographs, and not so much about the vacuum. This is something that's only recently been identified as a problem. But his answer to the questions about some of the anomalies identified in the photographs was, we don't have enough time for this nitpicky claptrap, which indicates either that they're not prepared to address the issue, or even worse, they're not aware of the issue. Now, if they're not aware of the issue, what on earth are they doing sending humans to the moon if they can't protect them? Because if they're not given any protection in their spacecraft, which they weren't, because we know it was only, well, the lunar lander, we're told, was covered with a thickness of 3 Reynolds wrap, which I believe is aluminium foil. And if you dropped a tool, it would tend to go through it, which doesn't sound very strong to me. So there doesn't appear to have been any protection that one can identify. protection for the astronauts, let alone for the cameras and the film. Either it's been overlooked or it's so secret that nobody will discuss it. I prefer that, because then there's a conspiracy there somewhere. But we haven't found it yet. But NASA will not address the questions. They will not come out and say, yes, we're aware of this as a problem, and this is what we did to overcome it, to ensure the protection of the astronauts and the equipment that was carried.
So if they didn't take the if they didn't take the pictures on the surface of the moon, where do you think they took them?
Well, if they weren't taken on the moon, there's only one other place they could have been taken, and that's here on Earth. Now, the idea that the whole thing was a fabrication has been around for some time. I think the person who first wrote about this was Bill Kaysing in his book, We Never Went to the Moon. That was followed up in 1992. That book was, We Never Went to the Moon, that was published in 1976. So it's fairly soon after the Apollo missions took place. Nobody took much notice of it. It was followed a few years later in 92 by a book by Ralph René, NASA Mooned America, which said more or less the same thing. And there was a lot of calculations in the book, a lot of indication that there were problems. But it's only recently, since the advent of the internet, which is maybe 20 years ago, that people are able to look at the information, examine it for themselves, rather than have to read the edited version in books. So they're coming to conclusions which are quite realistic. There are questions arising which are quite sensible questions to ask. Well, how were the astronauts protected? Because now President Trump has decreed that America will return to the moon. I think the date now is 2028.
Yes, they pushed it back.
It's been pushed back to, and it's going to now take longer to get back to the moon than it did allegedly the first time, because Apollo, announced by President John Kennedy in May 1961, in July 1969, just over 8 years later, they were on the moon. When they started, no American had been in orbit. John Glenn was the first to go into orbit in 1962.
Indeed. Marcus, we're just about out of time. Quickly tell people how they can get a hold of Nexus Magazine.
Right, Nexus Magazine. Either go online, nexusmagazine.com, where you can see all that's available, or you go into your local Barnes & Noble store, and you should be able to buy it there. It's available throughout America. So anybody who's not read Nexus will be one of those people I always describe as, there are two types of people in the world, those who read Nexus and those who are about to.
Indeed. So thank you so much.
People who are about to.
All right, Marcus, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Richard.
Nexus Magazine. All right, that's it for me. For George Norrie, George Nappy, and Punnett. You know, those Jayhawkers are pretty tasty, too. Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Denheiser, Dan Galani, Chris Burrows, Sean Latticer, Michael Cozio, and Donna Walker here in Toronto, Mike Ben Dixon, Robert Turner, Patrick O'Neill, and Alex Glutch. I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, so long for now.